I mean, come on. Can we give it up for the band again? That is stellar work right there, my friends. Woo! I missed that joke. The wild inner child. That is correct. What am I missing?
The teddy bear.
I am a giant teddy bear at heart. That is true. That's the takeaway here. I just want to start this by saying, Reverend Jill, if you're watching, I just know that you know this, but I want you to feel these beautiful faces and souls in this room, and we are sending you the most healing, energetic love, and I just want you to feel that and know that it's here. And speaking of beautiful faces, saw a lot of you guys last night at the Christmas party, and we got down, right?
Yeah.
It was a good time. It was a really good time. How are we doing today? Yeah? That's good. It was kind of a rough morning in the Finn household this morning. Our oldest son, Ford, lost his tooth last night, and the tooth fairy didn't show up. Yeah. Yeah. And so I talked to him this morning, and I said that she couldn't make it because it was really foggy outside, and her little wings were weighed down by the dew and the condensation, so she didn't make it. But I assured him that she would be there tonight. So, yeah. To make matters a little worse, he got very upset, very beleaguered. He's into, he got an Xbox for his birthday last month, and he loves construction. He loves building, tractors, all those things. And he's got a construction simulator game. And he was frustrated he couldn't make something work. So in a fit of just anger and acceptance, he just deleted all he'd done in this kind of fit of rage because he just didn't believe he was doing a good job. And it was tough. So we worked with him. And luckily, my lovely wife, Leah, thought that a dance party was what we needed to get this negative energy out. So we got wild. Got a little crazy this morning, and it was fun. It was the medicine that we needed. And that's what my talk's about today, the wild inner child, and how if we can get in touch with that inner child that's in all of us, it'll lead us on a path of adventure, understanding, and ultimately let us have a better relationship with that Christ consciousness that's inside of us. Now, when I got the call the other day to come step up for Reverend Jill, my inner child was like, No, I'm not ready. I got to practice more. And then the adult in me grabbed that little child by its hand and was like, no, we're going to go do this. And Reverend Jill likes to laugh at, I don't know if it's at the joke or more like making fun of me, but she loves to laugh at my dad jokes. So I've got a kid joke for you today that I got to give credit to Ford with. What is the room that a ghost is most scared of? The living room.
Oh.
Close. Yeah. And you know, that's a cute joke, right? It's cute. But think about that for a second. There is some truth to that because we are spiritual beings, ghosts, if you will. And sometimes, what are we most scared of? Right. We get scared of life, which is this ultimate blessing that we get to go on, this journey we are so blessed to witness and experience. And the whole genesis of this talk came about when I was volunteering at Ford's elementary school. They have this amazing program called the Watchdogs program. And the dogs and watchdogs stands for Dads of Great Students. Yeah, it's very cool. And it's wonderful. It's exemplifying having positive male energy on the campuses. And it's great. I mean, they really work you though. You get there at 7 a.m. and you go to 3:30, and they've got this itemized schedule for you. It's like, go here, go there. You're helping the aides, you're helping the teachers, you're assisting with PE. But it's great because you get to be involved in your kids and their friends' life. You get to see them in their natural element, right? And I remember I was at lunchtime, and I was watching them, and it was wild. I was with his friends, and one moment it was hugs and love, and I love you, you're my best friend. And literally within seconds, if not minutes, it was like, I hate you. You're never coming to my birthday party. You're not my friend. Ah, and tears. It was just, I was like, I was floored. I was looking at these kids, and I was like, Lord of the Flies is real, man. Like, if they were left on their own, they would kill each other. And it was like, God, it would be crazy if adults talk like that, right? Out loud. I mean, some of us do, but I like to believe that here at Unity, we aspire to a higher and more elevated form of communication. But if you, I started thinking about it, I was like, I don't talk like that. And I was like, you know what? I do sometimes. Inside here, you've got these inner voices that can be harsh, that can be judgmental, they can be limiting. And it's up and down all the time. It goes from 1 minute to being, oh, things are good, to like, oh my God, how could you do that? Just berating, raking yourself over the coals. And I was like, you know what? We do talk like that. And how can we rectify that? How can we mitigate that? How can we be better about that? And I started thinking, you know, it's because we're not in touch with this child, this wild child that's inside of us. And at some point, and maybe a majority of the time, we ignore them and we suppress them. We don't honor them. And that's when it can get wild. A child can get upset for many reasons, but the main one is when they feel insecure, when they feel not taken care of, not heard, not nurtured. And I feel that we feel the same way, right? A lot of times we need a certain security that in the moment that everything's going to be okay, that things are okay. And I think that since it's a season of Advent, and it's also the time of Christmas, and even the most disciplined of us with good intentions can kind of get caught up in the frenzied nature that is rooted in materialism. But even the tradition of presents around the tree is rooted in the act of acknowledgement and giving. It's this time that the very crux of all that we celebrate is about a child. And honoring that Christ child, whose story of birth is about the hope-filled arrival of Jesus, the long-awaited Messiah and King. It's a birth that disrupted nations and changed the face of mankind from then on out. Matthew 1:23 says, "Behold, the virgin shall be with child and shall bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel," which translated means God is with us. We might view this story as allegorical, right? But the grand takeaway is that God created a son in human likeness. God is with us. And within those lines that we believe and wholeheartedly agree with here is that God is in us. We are all reflections and embodiments of God. And this child, this birth of this child, was a great disruptor. The mere mention of this birth and this child struck fear in the heart of nations and kings. King Herod wanted to have him executed on sight because he didn't like the idea of the ideals of what was going on being disrupted. He didn't like the idea that power was in other people and not the kingdom. That we are the kingdom, right? And I want to be clear. I'm not going to make this like a political dissertation. That's not what this talk is about. I just want to try and distill this broad and grand story down to a little nugget to remind us of what we seem to constantly need reminding of. The great duality of children, the child, the Christ child. That rebirth and renewal is inherent and it's energetically a God trait. And at its core, the story of Christ is that this amazing energy was made manifest for all of us to see and feel and witness. Christ is born. Christ is human. Christ is God. God is all. And we are God. And we're all taught, and it's common in these societal norms, especially here in the West, that we are born children, and then we grow up, and we're not children anymore. And when we are children, we get chastised and reprimanded by the kings in charge. I mean, bear with me, but the parents, right? We need to be, they're fearful of these children's behavior or their non-behavior, that we need to act, they need to act more buttoned up. And then the child, our imagination, gets tempered. And at a certain age, we're expected to leave the bright-eyed, miraculous whimsy behind for the real world. And that's a whole nother talk, but what is the real world anyway? And that's a paradox, right? Because when we're older, a lot of time rigid, constricted, stressed out, we're told we need to lighten up and play more by our friends, by our loved ones, by doctors. It's not good for your health to be all, right? We have to take classes on miracles because this overbearing rationality has a lot of time pervaded the essence of our being. Kids live by their imaginations, right? I'll never forget, well, both my kids, they just, it's so fascinating to watch. But I'll never forget when Ford was younger. He was about, I don't know, 3 maybe. He's always been obsessed with mechanics, airplanes, aviation, construction. And he had a litany of these die-cast airplanes he used to play with. And he created this whole world, this tarmac, this airport, and he set it up. And I would see him do this thing. He had this, like, it was like a millimeter or a centimeter in his hand. And he'd do this thing. And I was like, what is he doing? He was loading up all the passengers ready to take flight. And he would spend like 30 minutes easily, just so laser focused and believe in this world. He would take these little, get them all loaded up, get the whole flight loaded up and take off. And I was blown away by this. You know, we talk about attention spans. My attention span is not that good. I don't believe that much. You know, and if we're lucky, some semblance of this imagination sticks with us. I remember when my nephew was about 6, pretty young, he told me he was going to invent flying cars. I was like, okay, well, get me one. He's like, well, you'll be like 5th or 6th on the list. I was like, okay, well, get me one anyway. I want one. So that kid is now an adult, and he's getting a macronautics engineering degree from A&M. Possibly going to have an internship at NASA. I mean, hey, stick with it. When I was a kid, my dream was to be a ninja. Now, there's not a huge job market for ninjas that I'm aware of, but I am still holding the flame. I am still practicing the karate, so we'll see what happens, all right? Kids have this amazing imagination, and they certainly don't need classes on miracles because they believe, right? They believe. Santa Claus. I mean, Santa Claus is undefeated, right? Every year, presents show up under the tree. That belief is made manifest. So why is it so hard for us to just believe in our Christ consciousness? It's like we forget. I know I do. One day I'm up here and I'm like, I feel effervescent. I feel just ethereal and things are flowing through me. I'm doing this, I'm doing that, it's going. And then someone will say something, some memory will pop up, and it just brings me down. And I can't create for squat. But God, the universe, it knows. It strives for harmony. And that's why we get to have kids, if it's in our cards. There are these little mirrors that show us what we've forgotten, what we might have buried and left behind. And if we're lucky, now you know what? Strike that. If we're able to be honest and aware, we might be able to dig down and reconnect with our own inner child that might be down there kicking and screaming. Excuse me. But that's also another paradox. Like the Christ child, the inner child is this great disruptor. It will lead you to areas that may need attention. But when we start listening to that inner child, we also need to be the rational adult that deciphers their cries. You know, we need to be that Holy Trinity. I struggled with that a lot because some of you might know I was, excuse me, I got something in my throat. As some of you might know, I was raised in the Catholic Church. And I would ask, you know, priest, my father, can you explain this to me? Can you explain the Holy Trinity? What does that mean? It was hard for me to really understand. Father, Son, Holy Spirit, it's all one. But if he's a man and he's a father and he's a son, like, it was just, didn't get it. And I started thinking, it makes perfect sense. We're all children. We're all spirits, right? We're all divine. We're energetic. And to tie that in and have that unified, we also need to be at the top. We need to be the patriarch or the matriarch that's going to lead the son and inner daughter on a true path, a good path. Chances are, when you start understanding this, getting in touch with that inner child, it might be wounded, hurt. And when we start listening to them, it could be a slippery slope that we let them run the show. Now, I find that my inner child gets frustrated with my own children. It gets jealous of the time I devote to them. And I don't pay attention to its whims. You know, he doesn't want to share. And he has a hard time seeing the beauty of giving and not just always receiving. It may be surprising, but for a long time, I've struggled with my self-image. My physical, what I project physically. I was raised by a very loving, doting, you might could say overbearing mother. She gave me so much love, but a lot of coddling. And in my younger days, I was kind of gangly and awkward. And it was tough for me to assimilate. See, kindergarten for me was this amazing, gentle, Montessorial-like school where my mother substitute taught a lot. And it was just that you brought your lunch there, and it was like beautiful music, touch with nature, and just, you know, just gentle softness. And then when I transitioned to public school in first grade, just the transition to that harsh, fluorescent public school lighting and the loud cacophony of kids, like, this sensitive little boy just didn't jive with that. It was tough. And so I would have anxiety attacks and panic attacks in the cafeteria. And so for the first couple weeks, I got to eat lunch in the homeroom with my teacher. Finally, I gingerly assimilated back to the cafeteria, and the playground became another animal, became another beast. The thing to do back then, and I mean, hell, let's be honest, we still do it, is to, for the opposite sex, chase the other opposite sex, and or people you're into. And I remember one time, gotta be PC. I remember one time I was kind of lagging behind this group of kids, and these two girls turned around and looked at me, and like, one was like, "Hey, do you want to chase him?" And the other was like, "No, he's weird looking." Turn around. Yeah, I know. And so little Michael, sensitive little boy, I mean, I'm still sensitive, but that sensitive little boy took it hard, took it very hard, internalized that deeply. You know, fast forward, you know, I had a pretty good, idyllic, all-American life. It was, you know, got into high school, and I started growing into my bones, right? Maybe started working out a little bit, and the opposite sex started taking notice, and man, the inner child really loved that, latched onto that. A little too much. I made that source of my identity. That if I look good, then I'm worthy of other people's love. That's not my mother. And I became identified with that. I didn't get the memo that we're worthy of love just by existing, just by being. It's our divine right. It's our divine gift that we have. The adult in me can see the fallacy of the cries of the wounded inner child. And they need to have a seat at your table because their concerns and their existence is valid. But we need to be at that head so that we can have a symbiotic relationship. And a great guidepost is to learn to differentiate between the sound of your intuition guiding you and your traumas misleading you. I really recently only started to truly develop this relationship with my inner child. And I know that his unchecked emotions were a chief cause of this anxiety and panic I've been living with for a long time, this health anxiety, this fear of death. I was adrift because I didn't have my own foundation. It was somebody else's, you know? I had the son part down great. Great at being this big, passionate spirit, too. But the father within me was absent, and the child was running the show. And just like a child who watches a scary movie with a monster, I got caught up in the gory details of my parents, my mother and my father's passings, as opposed to realizing the ebb and flow of life is not personal. And I lost sight of the beauty that's being able to witness the miracle of creation, and also that grace in dying. For there to be beginnings, there has to be endings. It's not negotiable. It's energetic law. And it just so happened that their endings on this plane gave space to. I mean, the energy practically forced there to be a rebirth of me, of myself and my place and my role in this world. I dusted off an old daily word here. As I grow older, I receive and appreciate all that I hear, feel, taste, and smell as a gift from the divine, an opportunity to grow and develop into who I have come here to be. And basking in this presence of God, I am filled. I give joyously and abundantly of my time and talents through act of love and kindness, goodwill, and camaraderie with everyone. What a joy and blessing it is to celebrate life. Though just one day out of the year marks my birthday, I live from an awareness that in each new moment, I begin anew. Becoming as a little child, I enthusiastically greet every day, every sensation, and every interaction, however small, with awe and wonder, as if experiencing it for the first time. Truly, I tell you, anyone who has not received the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it. Mark 10:15. Heaven is here on earth if we're awakened, if we explore. Children love to explore, and they don't feel any kind of way about it. They wholeheartedly just dive in, and they've been conditioned by sometimes well-intentioned people that came before and say that this is the way things are done and that is the only way. When we were born, I judge it's as close to the cosmos, pure in form of spirit, as we'll ever be. God is pure love. Babies are pure love. It's the only... They have to be, right? And at the core of it, what I've experienced, reflecting on my past and observing my own little boys, children just want to be loved. They embody that pure wanton desire that we carry through us through our entire life. And that is pure spirituality. When we are born, we are closest to that realm that will ever be. And our spirit has just newly entered this vessel. And then we have to learn how to be human in this human suit with all these gadgets. And it's tough because no one gives us a manual. We have this amazing high-tech thing, but we don't know how to drive it. Our manual is the behaviors that we were shown and inherit and then learn. And those behaviors might not serve us, but we are beholden to them because they come from our loved ones, our first loved ones, who for most of us, for many of us, are our parents. And when we're young, we view them as these infallible beings, right? But we don't realize that they have their own shortcomings and most likely traumas. And maybe they haven't been awakened or take time to work on themselves. So we take these learned habits, these viewpoints, and idiosyncrasies on. And when we get older, they might not serve us at all. And when we try to shed them, you know, at least in my case, it's kind of hard. Because I think that we have maybe this guilt that if we shed these or we pass these on, we're almost like spitting in the face of the people that raised us. But we associate them and these flaws with love. Maybe imperfect, flawed, but love nonetheless. And possibly that guilt of becoming a more evolved being because you feel like you're throwing that relationship away. And as we embrace and give this inner child proper guidance and attention, we can move past these limitations. My parents wronged me. She hurt me. He said that. They did this. And we can see them in a new light. Not flawless paragons, but humans that were once children themselves and probably didn't have access to this kind of thought, these kind of teachings, the support that we do now, this grand awakening that we're so blessed to experience here and every day if we're so willing. And that, my friends, that, beloved, is when this thing called grace comes in. And that, to me, that is the highest, that is the most optimized we can be, having grace for ourselves and others. We have to realize that our earthly parents did not create us, but they were just vessels that helped brought us into this realm because we were all created by the grand creator, right? God, Spirit. And the thing is, we have the obligation of this plane, but also the spiritual one, right? And trying to intermingle those and combine them and conjoin them sometimes, it's mind-blowing. It's hard. And that's a great paradox that we can't know. Why this plane seems so unevolved a lot of the time. But I tell you, it's our job to be seekers. To seek out this wisdom and this information that is lying latent here in the ether for us to discover. And we may feel from time to time that we need fixing. We don't need fixing. Children don't need fixing. It might be a little misdirection or redirection from time to time. Because you can't fix energy. You can't destroy energy. You can channel it. You can redirect it and get it flowing. Flowing up. Optimizing. You know, Jesus spent time with everyone. With beggars, prostitutes, lepers, the unsavory. It's our job when we tap into that Christ consciousness to spend the time with the unsavory part of ourselves that we might not like. It's our job to shine a light on the part of us that is begging for love and attention that we just kick to the side. So develop a relationship with that part. Through attention comes acceptance. Through acceptance comes the power to transcend. I found this absolutely amazing essay by Eric Butterworth on abundant living, and it was transmitted or written, delivered on May 19th, 1975. I've taken some excerpts from it, and it is just... In the dictionary, we learn that the root word of happiness is same as the word happen. And in this relationship lies the keys. Life uncompromised by man-made routines and obligations and rigidities is a flow of experience, of happenings. It becomes set and repetitive when human customs and harsh patterns of conduct make it so. Life is an adventure, and unhappiness always arises when we lose this adventuring spirit. Make life an adventure, and you will find the holy grail of happiness. Our minds are so constituted, we weary and worry in settings that are intended to bring permanent happiness. Retirement, for instance, rarely brings it. The whole philosophy of retirement is kind of a wall between ourselves and the flow of experience. To keep happy, we must keep turn to the variation of events. This was one of the great teachings of Jesus. Except ye turn and become as a little child, you shall in no way enter the kingdom of heaven. There is no other way. He who, like a little child, lives adventurously from moment to moment and from day to day, experiencing the spontaneous flow of life, is the only one to know true happiness. The famous psychologist Piaget wrote, "The only normal mind is the child's mind." He may have added that the only way to happiness is the child's way because he uses his mind properly. Imagination is at the forefront of all natural thinking. We are not literal creatures with our thoughts imprisoned in facts alone. If this were so, we would hate games and sports, and we certainly would not risk driving our cars on the highway. Through the ages, man has turned to the excitement of adventure, surviving many risks since prehistoric times, and attaining dominion over his environment. Imagination, memory, reason, and the five senses are all constituted to deal with changing experience. So normal life is not fashioned for security. This explains why money, position, and property all fail in the end to give us happiness. The more we have, the greater the man that we give a life of routine. The more security, the less spontaneous our experience. When we back ourselves in this corner of limiting the happenings, we limit and reduce all opportunities for happiness. A small child is naturally intrigued with life. To him, nothing is impossible, and anything can be means to adventure. He can spend many happy hours with mommy's pots and pans, or a spool of thread, or in my case, a little finger, and their imaginary man and woman. It is unfortunate that we have come to think of maturity as a time to put away childish things. And have faith and simplicity are one of the first things to go. When the child goes out of us, we lose our ability to find happiness in every experience. So the only way to return to happiness is to become once more like a little child. Elizabeth Acre Allen wrote, "Backward, turn backward, O time in your flight. Make me a child again, just for tonight." And what a wonderful, appropriate time that Christmas is to find that night to be like a little child. As we continue on in this Advent season of Christmas, let us go forth in remembrance that we are all, every single one of us, you, beautiful little baby that's not born yet. Children. Let's not lose sight of that. And let that awe and reverence and whimsy permeate our waking life with the knowledge that anything is possible. I don't know if, wow. I don't know if most of y'all probably know this book, The Polar Express. It's a beautiful mainstay in a Christmas reading. And if you don't know, it's about the story of this little boy that the Polar Express rolls up to his house one night. And he's struggling with his faith, his belief in Santa and the miracle of Christmas. He hops on that train, makes this beautiful journey up to the North Pole. And he's a lucky little child that gets invited to have the first gift of Christmas. And his wish is for one of the bells on the reindeer harness. At one time, most of my friends could hear the bell. But as years passed, it fell silent for all of them. Even Sarah found one Christmas that she can no longer hear its sweet sound. Though I've grown old, the bell still rings for me as it does for all who truly believe. Beloved, let's never stop believing. As we take these thoughts, these stories, these emotions, as we remember them, as we internalize them, just join me in taking a couple breaths. I know I need it. Take some deep breaths, just in. Slow as you want, as long as you want, as deep as you want. And try to let that exhale just flow gently and gracefully out of your diaphragm, through your mouth or nose. Take a couple more, if you will. Doesn't it just feel good to be in this vessel? To feel this space that's around you and inside of you. This limitless space, this energetic space with no boundaries. So breathe into that as far as you can. Expand it even further than you think possible. And I want you to go to a time when you're little. Time that's unburdened by worry and deadlines, expectations. Maybe see yourself as a little child. What's he or she thinking? What are they feeling? Give them a big hug. Let them know it's okay. Let them know that you're okay. I'm okay. We're okay. And I want you to dream a little dream with that child. It can be as grandiose, outlandish, big as you will. And I want you to breathe into that dream. And as you exhale, let that dream take flight. Let that dream become manifest. Let that dream become your truth, your reality. And as we go forth, every moment, every day from now where this might be forgotten, I want you to remember this time. And I want you to take a breath and let it be reinvigorated. And know that you, beloved, each and every single one of you, are God. And you are capable of all the goodness, all the magic that there is in this world. Take one more breath. Bring all that goodness to you in this moment. We thank you, God, for this brother and sisterhood, for this space, for this time. And so it is.